Well, if you left in 1962, then you were there through all of Dr. Fred's presidency, mm-hmm. Is this correct?
Yes.
Then you stayed in the office after then he left?
I was still over in the little office in Mr. Baldwin's office.
Oh, in Mr. Baldwin's office.
And when Mr. Alvium came in as president, he asked me to come back over. And
from
Eleanor,
Mr. Baldwin's office to?
Back to the president's
office. To the president's office.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did this make a change in your duties?
No, I continued with my regent work and I took care of the mail in the morning and learned to sort it the way Mr. Alvium liked to have it sorted, his first class in one spot and other, you know, second class and third class. I had places on my desk for each little pile. I never took dictation from him. He dictated to Eleanor or to can't think of her name. Well, the little girl that did the filing too. She was very helpful in the office. The new little girl that we brought in.
So by this time, you had been there longer than almost anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What kind of person was Mr. Alvium to work for?
He was a very pleasant person to work for. It was very easy for us to get used to him. Of course, we'd known him. He knew all of us. I had to learn some of the, like the way he wanted his letters sorted so that he could just pick up a few off the top or, you know, to take in and read and decide how he was going to answer and that sort of thing. But he was very easy to work for, and I would prepare the regent recommendations on staff, and I'd run them, you know, just rough draft, and give them to him and look over and see if he had any suggestions, if he wanted anything else written into the recommendation. And he rarely made any changes. He'd say, it's okay, go ahead.
Somebody said that he was a very hard worker.
He was. The morning that he passed away, he came in at 8 o'clock and picked up, and the thing that surprised me was that he picked up some second class stuff. And he usually picked up the first class mail that I had sorted. And he took it into the office, and of course he left the door open. Eleanor and I were sitting there at our desks working, and he had the heart attack. And I was working on a payroll because I was leaving to go down to Florida to get some finishing up done on our house that we were building down there. And I went out to the airport the morning before, and the flight didn't come from Minneapolis that I was to take. They had engine trouble. So I came back to the office, and he came in and saw me there, and he said, well, that was a short trip. I told him what happened. So I stayed there and worked that day, and I came in the next morning again, because the flight that I took didn't go until 10 o'clock or something like that. And we always got our mail, and I said, told Eleanor I'd come in and get the mail and get it opened and ready. So I was working at my desk, and I thought I had to get the payroll out as long as I was going to be gone an extra day. And when I heard something that didn't sound quite right, and he was having a heart attack. It was his breathing. So we got some help in. Finally, Mr. Peterson came, and Clark Smith. I went down to the business office, because I said we shouldn't be alone. And they telephoned his doctor and got him. And he was at the hospital, and they brought the university police car up. It was a station wagon type. Mm-hmm. And they brought the stretcher in to take him out. I don't think was barely conscious then. I went downstairs. We always had a blanket and a pillow down in the vault down in the basement in our office space. And I went down there and got the pillow because he looked so uncomfortable when we started to put him on the stretcher. And I tucked it under his head, and he did look up. Didn't say anything. That was the only sign that, of any recognition that he had, he was conscious. Mm. And then when I got to Chicago to change planes, Eleanor had me paged, and she told me that he passed away at the hospital right after he got there.
Oh my.
His doctor was there when they called. And they said, "We'll bring him right in just as quick as you can." So he had immediate attention, but it was one of those things.
And sometimes it's like that.
Very sudden.
Did you then go on to Florida, or did you turn around and come back?
Well, I said I'd come back, but Eleanor said, "Well, there are so many here that will be helping, and so many of Mrs. Albion's friends will be helping too, so." She said, he knew you were going, so why don't you go on? I went on down. I wasn't here for any of the services.
I see. How long was this trip of yours?
Oh, it was only 3-4 days. But it happened, everything happened so suddenly. But by that time, the funeral was over.
Well, this, as I remember, was at the beginning of the summer, was it?
Mm-hmm.
Or
July, if I remember correctly, that I went down. We were planning to move, you see, in the fall.
Oh, that's right. You said that you
fall
left
of 62.
In 62.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then you left just as Harrington.
He had just been in a very
arrived.
Short time. Mm-hmm.
Did you work with him at all before you left?
Just a little bit. I helped Mrs. Harrington with getting things for the house because she had quite a few things she wanted to change. But that was about all the contact I had with her, and then. Mr. Harrington would, he'd have little scraps of paper he'd bring with his letters handwritten. And the letters would all be in a pile, and all these little scraps would be there, and you'd have to put them all together, right, and type them up for him to sign. Either that or else he'd have one letter here, and he might have another one here, and another one over here. A piece of paper.
All on one piece? It couldn't have been very long.
He'd take it home at night. But as I recall, he didn't care about the Ediphone and dictating to a machine.
He preferred to
jot down his own
notes?
He liked to sit down and write his own letters.
Then you just had to
type them up. That was, we did more of that. Well, he did dictate some, but if he took home some mail at night, you could bet on it that there was going to be a nice fat stack in the morning. He did that a lot of work that way. That had been his habit before. I learned from a former secretary. So.
no particular reason to change, I guess.
No reason to change. He liked it that way.
How was his handwriting?
It wasn't bad. It was quite easy to decipher. Once in a while, we'd have to ask, but it was very seldom.
Which of all these systems did you prefer?
I think, of course, it was easier for me when I was working with Mr. Frank. I think that working with him was probably the easiest. Then Mr. Dykstra was really the next best.
Why was it easier with Professor Frank?
Well, of course, I didn't have the responsibility then that I had later on.
Oh, yes.
Because Miss Wilkinson was there, and she took the responsibility.
True.
So it was much easier then.
Well, then, essentially, okay. After she died, you more or less took over her role.
Yeah. Well, there wasn't anyone else who knew any more about the office than I did at the time, so I guess I was the logical one to stay on.
When you finally left, who took over your responsibilities? Had there been somebody in the office?
Esther Madsen. No, Esther Madsen had, she'd been working for, I don't know whether, she was working over in College of Agriculture. And I've forgotten who she was with at that time. But she was very interested in, she came over and saw me and talked to me and said she was very interested in, would I say a word for her? And I said, well, I wouldn't say a word for anyone, really, because I don't think that's the thing to do. And I said, I will tell Mr. Albion that you are interested. And if he'd like to see you, I'll call you and let you know. So that's what we did. But she didn't like the work over here, I guess, because she left and went to work as secretary to Dean Wendt in engineering. She still lives here in Madison. I didn't see her this time when I came.
But you sometimes have kept in touch.
When I stayed with Judah before I was married this time, I used to see her because she lives next door.
To Judah Riley?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Tell me about Judah Riley, by the way. I wanted to interview her, and she didn't think she wanted to.
Well, Judah was the one who told Miss Wilkinson that she thought that I'd be a good person to get to bring into the president's office from Extension.
Oh, she was. Had she known you?
She was secretary to the dean of Extension when I was there.
Who was that?
Judah.
No, who was
Dean Snell. Mm-hmm. She was Dean Snell's secretary. And she told Miss Wilkinson, Miss Wilkinson called her and asked her if she knew of anyone over there that she could get to transfer over to the president's office. See, there had only been Fayella Schmidt worked, was the girl who was working in the office when I came. And she was the girl who got terribly nervous and upset when she tried to take dictation to the typewriter. So that's when I was needed and didn't know it.
But they didn't tell you you were going to do
no,
this.
No, they didn't tell me I was going to have to take dictation this way. I came over and started taking shorthand, of course, and then Mr. Frank got the idea that he'd like to try, see if I could take dictation, I guess. Asked me to bring my typewriter in, I went in. And then, from then on, I was in on the 9, 10 copies at a time.
Did you mind this?
No, I guess it didn't make me nervous. I got used to it very easily, and he was a very a considerate person when he was dictating. As I told you the other day, when I'd come to a word that ended in I-B-L-E or A-B-L-E, he would know when I stopped. He'd know where, exactly what letter I was on in the word, and he'd say it's A-B-L-E or I-B-L-E, whichever fit.
Oh, nice. Oh, nice. Now, you said something to me the other day about the Carnegie Foundation retirement program.
Yes,
can you tell me about that?
In the president's office, the staff would come when they were ready to retire and ask us to prepare the form that Carnegie Foundation provided for us to send in for their allowance, their retirement allowance. And it was a very simple form to fill out, and we'd send that in, and the secretary of the Carnegie Foundation would send us a note telling us exactly what the person's expectations would be, and we'd send them a copy of it.
That was so pretty much all there was to it?
That was about all there was to it. It was very simple. Of course, it wasn't as... retirement allowance wasn't very generous. It was quite small compared to what the faculty members got later on from the state retirement fund. But some of the old-timers were on that Carnegie list, and until that ran out, they were still receiving funds from
even after the state retirement. They didn't go on state retirement
because they were already on that Carnegie Foundation retirement system.
So they stayed on it, and the new faculty
were taken
directly
into the state retirement system.
You think that was better?
I mean, it was more lucrative for the newer people than the older staff.
Well, the Carnegie Foundation couldn't have covered as many people,
See, the university was much, much smaller when they were under that retirement allowance. So, and you see, I think it was probably before the state retirement, well, it must have been before the state retirement system was set up.
Yes, I think I heard
so
something.
That they were pleased to be on any kind of retirement allowance.
Yes, well, and particularly during the Depression time.
Mm-hmm. That was when we waived part of our salary. And the reason the civil service people were asked to waive part of the salary to keep us in the same civil service classification. And at the time that they asked us to accept the waivers, we all thought that we were going to get something back, but we never did get anything back.
Well,
the first raise that we got after the Depression was a $2 a month raise.
Well, what happened then was that for a few years you didn't get the salary.
We didn't get
you
a full salary,
getting.
No.
How was this worked out in percentages?
I suppose it was. I don't remember exactly, but say in those days a stenographer would be getting about maybe $114 a month, and it would go down maybe to $110 or 112, something like that. There was just it was a small amount that was taken off, but it was enough that it was supposed to help the situation financially for the state by our accepting the waiver.
Well, of course, it was university-wide, so that
That's
everybody
right.
Except that I heard that there was criticism because Glenn Frank didn't think he should suffer any decrease. Do you know anything about that?
I don't recall that. I don't recall that at all. I thought everybody took it.
Well, everybody supposedly did except Mr. Frank.
Well, somebody else may have known more about it. I just don't remember it. I wasn't doing payroll at that time.
I see. So then when things improved a bit, you did begin to get raises.
We'd get, you know, very
but
small.
Nobody made up the balance that you'd given up.
Well, I know, I remember very well that the $2 that we got was not the amount that had been taken from my salary for the waiver.
So you still weren't where
so
you
I still
had been.
Wasn't back where I had been.
It took a few years
to get
there.
Took a little while to get there. But really, I think people learned a good lesson during the Depression. They learned that they could get along without a lot of things. Everybody was in the same boat.
Oh, that's quite true. Did you have anything in during all these years? Did your work include anything with to do with student housing or student activities?
Mm-mm. Not too much.
This was all handled separately.
But the only contact we had was. Some of the students from the Cardinal would come up and to see the president or to see Miss Wilkinson, really. I never had too much contact with them.
And am I right in guessing that when Miss Wilkinson died and you took over her activities, that by then the university had grown to the point where there was less of this kind of thing?
That's right. Very true. And then of course the presidents had changed and things were getting different right along, you know. As we grew, we didn't have nearly the contact with students that we did before.
Then the president's staff must have grown too.
No,
didn't?
No,
stayed how many in his office?
Just three in the office.
Mm-hmm. That's what it was when you came?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That was still what it was when you left?
Still what it was when I left. That's right.
My goodness. Well, I'm running out of questions. Is there anything that comes to mind that...
I haven't thought of anything in addition to the things that we talked about the other day.
Looking back over all this, these many years that you were here, what do you reflect?
Well, so many people said to me, aren't you going to quit work someday? And stay at home, be a housewife. And I said, the work in the office has always been so interesting. And you meet so many nice people. And you have to be on your toes a little bit. And I think that's good for you. And I didn't intend to quit until I was getting nearer retirement. And then, of course, my husband had been very ill and had a heart surgery, so I felt that it was going to be to our advantage to have as much retirement as we could. So that was one reason why I stayed. I was only 62 when I did retire, but it was because of his health that I could have stayed longer. Mr. Harrington wanted me to stay. He said, you'd be such a help to Mrs. Harrington. And I said, well, I've got a problem with an invalid sister and my husband with a heart condition, so, and his doctor wants him to move south, so.
So that's what
that
you
was That
That's
was
what
our,
you did.
That was our farewell.